Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, this is Peter Bart.
And Mike Fleming.
And this is the Bart Fleming Podcast. Hello, everyone. Mike, I keep wondering about film critics. Now, I know I never could be a film critic because I'm too damn opinionated. But it seems to me one consistency is that the preponderance of film critics dislike movies that are very entertaining. The recent example to me was Bohemian Rhapsody, which has grossed $164 million in this country and over $500 around the world. And critics, by and large, hated it. I saw it in a theater, and I could feel the audience really embrace it. I really liked it. Another example of this phenomenon is Green Book. Picture, which again, I enjoyed a lot, and I think you did too. It's very entertaining, as well as having a fascinating theme. Again, it's not doing well with the critics.
Well, I bet you it's going to do well with the audience. I think the word of mouth on that film is going to be very strong. There's nothing wrong with going to the theater and enjoying yourself, is there?
I kind of like it, and I get a better sense of how a film really plays.
Well, you mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody, and Rami Malek was the closing act of our Contenders event in New York, and he took his time, and he was funny and engaging, and I think that young man on the Oscar circuit is going to charm a lot of people, and I think we may find that he is a nominee.
It wasn't clear to me, has he worked in film before?
He has, but this was his big coming out party. And of course, he won the Emmy for Mr. Robot.
Well, I think he's excellent. I think there's some interesting social and political undertones in that movie, too. Which brings me to another question I have for you. And that is, do you think the public is ready for political movies? I noticed that Front Runner, story of Gary Hart's ill-fated political presidential career, people aren't going to see that movie. And again, it's a pretty damn good movie. Jason Reitman did a very subtle job with that. But the big question again pertains to Adam McKay's picture, Vice, which is really a political movie. Is the public, once again, ready to embrace a movie that's blatantly political and that revisits situations like the Iraq War, which a lot of us not necessarily want to revisit?
Well, I think what Adam did and the ways he distinguished himself as a storyteller in The Big Short, he really does an excellent job in Vice, making what could be dry material compelling. I mean, much the way when he had complicated financial structures, he had Margot Robbie in a bubble bath holding a glass of champagne and explaining them. And here you have Dick Cheney and Lynn Cheney in bed doing Shakespearean sonnets. There's a lot of ingenuity, I think, in that film. And I was entertained the entire time. And I emerged from the theater very sad about how basically it seemed that the entire war was basically manipulated by Cheney and his cohorts and around George W. Bush and around the Congress. And they basically sold a war on a lie, and it was depressing. But I loved the journey of getting there. I thought Christian Bale's performance was just crazy good, and so was Sam Rockwell, and so was Amy Adams, and so was Steve Carell as Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, this was really high, top-notch stuff. Are people going to want to see it? I don't know, but I sure loved seeing it.
Again, though, watching Christian Bale, who surely gained 100 pounds, and it wasn't just the weight, he just looked and sounded different. That he would play Dick Cheney is very theatrical and bizarre in a way, really.
Well, Adam McKay said, you know, Christian took his time and you know, and he was impressed by the way Christian did the voice, but he said, now I'm going to show you the walk. And Adam said he had it down so spot on that the hairs on his arms stood up. And that was a tough movie to make. And Adam told us that that basically he ended up having a heart attack, like the subject of his movie, after he finished principal photography. And he actually used the images of, it looks like an octopus, in a scene in the movie when the world is closing in on Dick Cheney and he's full of paranoia. If you look closely, you'll see Adam McKay's clogged heart, because he was smoking like two packs a day. And interestingly, when he was talking about Dick Cheney, he said that Dick Cheney smoked four packs a day. And Adam said that he didn't smoke two packs a day on this movie, but he did on Saturday Night Live. And he said, it's very difficult to smoke two packs. But he said there was Dick Cheney, used to have a dozen donuts a day and four packs of cigarettes. That's just it's just amazing. I thought the movie was very strong. But we saw that with Michael Moore's sequel to Fahrenheit 9/11. That was by far the biggest grossing documentary of all time. And Michael came out with a movie about Donald Trump and about the way the world is going. And Fahrenheit 11/9, nobody seemed to be very interested in it. I don't know why.
Well, for those of us who, like yours truly, who don't really have an appetite for political films now, they could follow the example of a friend of mine who in New York last week took in both the cat festival, the cat film festival, and the dog film festival. And what he told me is that with cat films, it was very clear the point, the theme was that if you have a cat and you're feeling down, the cat will look at you and basically walk in the other direction. If you have a dog and you're feeling blue, the dog will come over and cuddle. And so I think those people who don't want to delve into politics, dogs and cats, they're all over the place today. Lots of movies about them, and they reinforce all your images about them. Have you tried that, Mike? You have a dog.
No, my dog passed away. But usually when we talk about a movie being a dog, it's not a good movie. I gotta be honest. I can't think of the last good cat movie that I've actually seen.
Well, there's Catwoman, which reminds me that Catwoman has made a list of the superhero movies that are now in development about women. So here's the list, Mike: Spider-Woman, Batwoman, Star-Girl, Supergirl, and of course, Black Widow. And even Marvel, whose cast has been very macho of superheroes, Ant-Man and the Wasp was female, right? So even they've broken the rule. And if women are going to follow the course of Wonder Woman and be stars of more superheroine movies, what does that say about the industry? I mean, already there's some very interesting films about women that have recently come out. Mary, Queen of Scots, got a lot of bite to it. I don't know if you've seen that. And of course, a favorite about the scandalous reign of Queen Anne is a fascinating movie. And then finally, I don't know if you saw The Wife with Glenn Close, which was really about a very forceful woman who stole the limelight back from her celebrity husband again, which is that's a tough movie. But if more and more films are about women and starring women, is this going to reflect itself, do you think, in terms of the executive corridor in Hollywood?
Well, you know, periodically over the past 30 years, we would see an influx of successful films with black directors. And remember, Peter, Boys in the Hood started and Menace to Society, and these young directors were coming out. And I remember Spike Lee was always the guy to say, Nothing's going to change until there are decision-making executives of color at studios. And there really aren't very many of them. And so what ends up happening is these become, they become fads. And they come and they go and they ebb and they flow. And then you end up with Oscars So White, which we had just a few years ago. Now, there are women in positions of power at studios. And I think some of this might be, sort of a ripple effect of the Me Too movement and the realization of just how grotesque some men in this business behaved. I mean, I'm sure you read that New York Times piece about Les Moonves. You read this and you say, how is this man allowed to run wild in the corridors of CBS or Warner Brothers for so many years? It's detestable. But I find myself writing more stories about films with female directors than I can ever remember happening before. And you forgot about Harley Quinn, who came out in Suicide Squad, and now she's got a spinoff movie called Birds of Prey. And I bet you that's going to do very, very well. I say bravo. I think it's about time that we see movies not from just the same 12 white directors.
I thought Manola Dargis, the movie critic, one of the movie critics of the New York Times, wrote an affecting piece the other day where she really asked what the movies taught me about being a woman, reflected on the pictures she saw over the years and in her youth. And she said that it reminded her that women can speak out. They can even be dangerous, like the femme fatales in film noir movies of the past, like a movie, Gun Crazy, and Out of the Past. Both had dangerous women then. But still, there were many other examples she cited where women basically were presented to do what they're told. She revisited a scene from The Quiet Man, when John Wayne scuffled with Maureen O'Hara and implanted a very, shall we say, forceful kiss on O'Hara. Manola Dargis said the kiss was what she would call a little rapey. But she writes that John Ford's behavior generally toward O'Hara on the set was abusive and sexist. But she goes on to say that O'Hara, in her portrayed in the movie a portrait of resolve, which gave the film its glint of realism. So the bottom line, I think there are many different portraits of women in film today. There's also a sense of liberation that's coming through, along with a recurrent tinge of anger. It's interesting to revisit it, as she did, from the standpoint of history.
Well, I thought that piece was actually very touching, and some of those scenes that she broke down didn't hit me when I first saw them. And why would they? I'm a guy, and those films were framed through the creative prism of a man and of a bunch of men, and there were probably no women in that room at all who basically injecting any sort of sensitivity. And that's why it is important to have more voices in Hollywood of color and of gender, and I think Hollywood is headed in a good direction, and I'd be very curious to see what the results are in terms of the way the movies are being made. I think Manola Dargis was absolutely right. Those women were objectified and they were being put in their place. And I don't think that you'll see that anymore.
I think, though, the challenge, Mike, realistically, in the workplace, in the writers' rooms and on the set of pictures, there has to be more and more a sense of true camaraderie between the sexes. It can't be just conflict. It has to be camaraderie for the workplace to be comfortable and for creativity to emerge from it. So anger between the sexes can only trigger more anger. I think what needs to happen is a sense of camaraderie.
But there also needs to be a sense of inclusion. And it just, a woman, it would take a woman like Manola Dargis to basically see those scenes that she broke down in the way that she saw them. And I would be willing to bet you that if you had 40 women in a room reading that article, they would have seen it exactly the same way, or maybe not as deeply, but they would have felt the same kind of things. Those movies were not being made for those women. Those movies were not being made by women. Those movies were being made by men. And maybe that'll be the difference going forward. And maybe it'll help. Maybe it'll rub off on the culture. I hope.
It sounds like you're preparing your anti-sexist Oscar speech, Mike.
I think we're in an important moment. And for people who've covered the business for a long time, like you and I didn't know about Harvey Weinstein and what he was doing. I think I heard a rumor about Louis C.K., but it just sounded preposterous. And the stuff about Les Moonves, I mean, he's become television's answer to Harvey Weinstein. And I just think that the idea that this stuff was allowed to go on and that these women had to stay silent because if they even wanted to try to get a foothold in the business, it's disgusting and sickening to me.
Well, I think on that note, we should sign off. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.